As the nation marks Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, there are lots of questions and debates in the political world about the best ways to teach the history of race, racism, and the civil rights movement in American schools. In the last couple years, a wave of anti-racism protests and efforts like the 1619 Project called for more attention to that history and to the long-term impacts of racism. That was met by a backlash centering around a concept called critical race theory. And Republicans in state legislatures in Wisconsin and around the country worked on laws to change the school curriculum and define what teachers could and couldn't say about race and history. A Wisconsin historian joins us now for a look at the question, how should we teach kids about race and American history? You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your answer to that question. If you're a parent of kids, what kind of things do you want to see them learning at school? If you're a current or former educator, what did you find difficult or maybe fulfilling about teaching students about the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King Jr.? What kind of responses do you get from students, their parents, from your community? What thoughts do you have about bills which don't mention critical race theory by name, but say they target it? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Robert S. Smith is the Harry G. John Professor of History and Director of the Center for Urban Research, Teaching, and Outreach at Marquette University. He's the author of the book Black Liberation from Reconstruction to Black Lives Matter, which came out last summer. Rob, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Glad to be here this afternoon, especially today. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, it's not always easy to talk about race and racism, even among adults. When it comes to schools, what are some of your baselines for the way we should think about how to teach kids about race, racism, and American history?
Well, you know, it's probably the hardest topic to discuss in a number of ways. I think the first thing we have to do is always, and I'm going to borrow from Marquette University's mission, we have to be in search of truth. That's what has to guide all of what we do with any educational approach, but particularly with history. And in that process, there are certainly debates that can help inform and help us approach truth. And so you get multiple perspectives, you get various approaches, and then there is indeed this important process of rigor that it gets us to some understanding of historical truth, and that can still be debated in all kinds of ways. And so it's the discourse that we have to be committed to first and foremost. But I do think when we talk K-12, we have to think about the age of young people. We have to think about what we should teach young people so that they can best absorb some of the complicated and difficult topics. We have to be committed to it over years and build upon ideas and topics in our school curricula. And in that process, then for the more challenging and difficult and indeed violent portions of our history, we have to make sure that we have a full contextualization of the individuals involved so that we humanize everybody who's involved in those historical dramas, and then also continually make sure we're paying attention to policy and law and all those other components to help us understand that. I know I just dropped a lot in that, which probably made folks go to sleep, but you asked a history professor a question like that.
And I asked you a big, broad question, too. Now, where things seem to get a political response these days is when we say, we're looking at this part of our history and connecting the dots today and saying we're still feeling the impacts of slavery through segregation, through voting rights, property rights, that sort of thing in 2022. What do you think about teaching that connects the dots between our history when it comes to race and racism and our current state of racial relations?
Well, in some cases you can connect particular dots. And, you know, for example, housing and home ownership is one of those histories that the dots get connected very easily in a lot of respects. In other capacities, in other arenas, you might see a history echo more than have a direct connection. You know, voting rights has some very connect ties to it. We've worked much harder as a nation to deny large numbers of people the right to vote than we have worked to include more people in that process. And yet there are also these ways, and so those are some direct examples. But in terms of the echoing, you see the ways that disparities in any number of arenas continue. We see moments of progress in some ways during key reform eras. And as you mentioned, we then see backlashes and retrenchment. And so that's where the echoing becomes a useful way to think about it, because you don't necessarily have to have these direct connections all the time, but you do need to have a sense of where you've been in the past, what looks familiar from some of those previous developments, because that then gives us a sense of how we get out of these situations, and that indeed we can get out of them in some way if we're creative about the ways that we engage people and voice and policy.
Talking to Robert S. Smith, historian at Marquette University, looking at how we teach about race, racism, and the civil rights movement in U.S. schools. You can join in with your thoughts or your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. You pointed us toward a speech, the Drum Major Instinct speech from February of 1968, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. here, talking about conversations he had with the white wardens of the jail where he was held in Birmingham.
And I said, you are put in the position of supporting your oppressor, because through prejudice and blindness, you fail to see that the same forces that oppress Negroes in American society oppress poor white people. And all you are living on is the satisfaction of your skin being white and the drum major instinct of thinking that you are somebody big because you're white. And you're so poor you can't send your children to school. You ought to be out here marching with every one of us every time we have a march.
There's a lot of Dr. Martin Luther King's speaking to talk about. Why did you point this one out to us in particular?
Well, you know, there are a couple of, I think, important components about this. This is just a couple of months before we lose Dr. King. And it provides this window into, you know, toward the end of this speech. And I encourage everybody listening to go revisit the Drum Major Instinct today. It's a brilliant, brilliant conversation that Dr. King is having from his position as a leader of a movement, the face and voice of a movement, but then also his role as clergy. But then that very serious and very real journey we all go through, and that's, you know, determining what our life legacy will look like. What is it that we leave when we are no longer here? And he's grappling with those very serious questions. And at the same time, it highlights and emphasizes again how brilliant of an intellectual Dr. King was, because using that drum major instinct idea, he then critiques not only the individual self, but he looks at race prejudice, as we heard in that particular clip. He looks at U.S. global politics in this same lecture. And then, you know, it's a rich engagement with him as a person, a human being, a leader of this important reform era in U.S. history, and then also this astute intellectual as well.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Sarah is with us in Libertyville, Illinois. Sarah, hi.
Hi there. Well, I've done this with so many classes, but the one that I guess I'll talk about is second grade, a dual language class, and we would have like a week-long unit on civil rights. And of course, we had to simplify it a lot, so it was mostly Rosa Parks and segregation, and then we would talk about Martin Luther King and the Voting Rights Act, like very, very simplified, but that how he was able to get that passed. And my kids just love it. They always love it. And they're so shocked to find out that segregation exists and that there were all these obstacles to voting. And then when we talk about these people standing up and being courageous and working to change it, they clap. I mean, these kids get really excited about it. And I had one girl who was she just started jumping up and down and cheering and like clapping. She was just so happy.
Sarah, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Sounds like Sarah must be a good, enthusiastic teacher there for one thing. Rob, what do you think of her shocked and inspired her students are?
Well, you know, thanks, Sarah, because, you know, the work that our teachers are doing, and have always done, but particularly in this moment, we need to all take a moment and thank them seriously over and over and over. You know, so much of the experience with young people, educators witness that moment that a young person's face sort of changes when you know that they've engaged in a topic that's impacting them. It's one of the beautiful moments of being an educator. And that's sort of the gold nuggets of it all. But these are brilliant stories. You know, these are heroes. These are mothers and fathers and sons and daughters and uncles and aunts. They're folks who we walk past every day who've done some remarkable things. The average person has been more central to social change than the leaders themselves. You know, the leaders are important for carrying messages, but it's the day-to-day stories of folks overcoming and doing heroic and remarkable stuff that is so inspiring. And it's important for our young people to hear that so that they know that indeed they are the agents of the future. You know, it's their future that we are in some ways helping to mold, but they are really responsible for that. And it's important, as Dr. King said in the speech, that we all be drum majors for justice, you know, and what better way to do and highlight those important stories, to tell those stories and to encourage young people to be drum majors for justice, but from Dr. Rosa Parks and these other legends.
Thanks for that call, Sarah. We're talking to Robert S. Smith, professor of history and director of the Center for Urban Research, teaching and outreach at Marquette University, looking at how we teach and talk about race, racism, and the civil rights movement in U.S. schools. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a parent, have you talked with your kid or kids about what they learn in school about the civil rights movement? What do you think about what your school teaches, how they teach it? If you are a teacher, love to hear your experience as well at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Marquette history professor Robert S. Smith, looking at the ways we teach about race and racism in American schools. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Will is with us in Eau Claire. Will, hi.
Hi, guys. Thank you for the show. And I wanted to ask your guest about other voices, men and women from that period, who he would identify as contemporaries of Dr. King. For example, I had the privilege of a group of us had a conversation and coffee with Andrew Young during, I think it was 1969. So just a quick question about other voices, men and women who were also pivotal during that period. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks for that call, Rob. I've heard concerns sometimes that we might get this picture that it was just Dr. King and the civil rights movement. And clearly, as Will was pointing out, it wasn't just him.
Yeah, thanks. Well, that's a great question. And I want to one more time just reemphasize that it's all those faces in those marches whose names we don't know, or whose names we may not know in that particular image or something, that those are the folks whose stories are so brilliant as well. And let's always remember those, what we might refer to as grassroots activists who carried those local movements. There are two names that really come to mind that I think are important in this particular moment, and then also folks whose lives and whose ideas have been critical. And that's Bayard Rustin and Ella Baker. And so to my fellow educators out there, these are two folks who are so critical to longstanding movements for racial equality, but then also have inroads and ties and are involved in other struggles, whether it's broadly class-based labor movements, then also movements for gender equality. And so I'd encourage Bayard Rustin and Ella Baker as two key voices that deserve a bit more attention in the classroom. And they are also very complex figures as individuals. And so they provide some room for some other important discussions that are not directly movement related, but certainly play a role in some important topics of the era.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Rob, I wanted to look at laws being advanced or passed in states around the country, including one effort to pass one in Wisconsin that specify the curriculum and what is okay and not okay. The author of one here in Wisconsin wrote in a memo that the bill doesn't restrict teaching an inquiry about the history of racism, but, quoting, it restricts indoctrination, abusive pedagogies, and state-sanctioned racism, end quote. And then the supporting memo says red flag phrases include things like racial prejudice. What do you think as you look at bills from state lawmakers trying to, I guess, change the way we teach about race and racism?
Yeah, it's disturbing that questions around education and curriculum related matters isn't engaged. This legislative movement, this backlash, if you will, this counter movement, that we don't have the voices of teachers and principals and curricular experts leading the way to move us forward in the classroom. The fact that this is being legislated is the exact reason why we have to explore these topics on and on and on, because these policies feel more like an effort to dismiss the past than to use the past, engage with the past, and become better informed about the past so that our learning today moves forward in effective and progressive ways. And so they're very disturbing. It's also disturbing that in our case in particular, here in Wisconsin, that the legislation encourages lawsuits to be directed at educators and school boards, that, you know, because that just creates more social division. It creates what's already a heavily and hotly, viciously politicized world. It just creates more and more division in our country and at our local levels. These are very problematic and very concerning, because you have experts in the classroom who can give us all the direction we need to make sure that we're teaching our young people appropriately. And to use these kinds of dog whistles, really, it's another echoing of a similar kind of playbook when intellectual thought, when creative thought, when critical thought is under attack.
Let's go back to our callers now. Joe is with us in Jefferson. Joe, hi.
Hi. I'm so glad you're talking about this today. I've found for years, speaking with people, mostly white people in suburban areas and whatnot, that they tend to feel like racism is not a problem anymore, and that actually black people use it as an excuse. And this is such a prevalent thing. I think we don't ever talk about it, unfortunately, because it's such a sensitive topic. But when you're calling out, basically, like I am now, how much racism is around, you know, white people in general, that's a hot, how do you discuss this issue? And that's why with children, what I was saying to the screener is, with education, you can get to the children, but I'm mostly talking about people that are older, obviously. And it's sad that, you know, I don't know how we're going to get to those people that are older. They're in denial and they rewrite history. And it's such a political, I think it's underneath the politics a lot more than people realize.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Rob, I know we're focusing on schools here, but do you thoughts on about having productive conversations among grownups that don't just end in yelling and tears?
Yeah, you know, part of the speech there that Dr. King offered in that clip in particular, just before it, you know, he says that when he was, you know, in jail, he had very calm conversations with the correction officers there about issues associated with race. And that's in 1968. We've obviously devolved significantly, because we are in a place where it's very difficult to have any meaningful civil exchange these days. And yet it's great to hear somebody who sounds still willing to have those conversations. So all is not lost. I do want to add that, you know, our education institutions, the educational system more broadly, is the key place where we do have these conversations. And so it's important for us to preserve the richness that we can experience in our education system as a result of an exchange of ideas. And so let's make sure we remember how important our schools and our universities and our colleges are to that project. But I will say that living here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and working with a whole range of community-based organizations and community experts, they are always having conversations that help to raise our collective social IQ on a number of topics. And so I want to make sure to give those hardworking folks a shout out, because they are indeed a part of an important process of public education that's not in our schools, that's outside in our community spaces, in our libraries, in our museums, and all these wonderful institutions that continue to push forward the importance of learning, public learning in those spaces as well.
In our last minute and a half or so, I know there are concerns on every Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day that people worry that we're getting a sanitized version of him, the I Have a Dream speech, the more unifying messages. What do you recommend to get a fuller, rounder understanding of his message?
You know, in some ways, I think that's the case. And I want to say something that could obviously be challenged. It's okay to go back over some of those wonderful stories, even if those are stories that we've heard over and over. There is an importance that goes into making sure that we know some of these key elements. At the very same time, we live in this digitally sophisticated world. And as you all know, in preparation for our conversation, we could share all kinds of information with one another, whether it was actual audio clips of Dr. King, the actual transcripts from his speeches. And you can find these at any number of institutions, particularly work that's been recognized by the family and archives recognized by the King family. So there's a wide array of ways to get to some of the other components to Dr. King that help to tell a fuller story about him as a person, him as a leader, him as a leader in the religious community as well.
Rob, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That's Robert S. Smith, the Harry G. John Professor of History and Director of the Center for Urban Research, Teaching, and Outreach at Marquette University. We talked to him today, this afternoon, about some of the challenges educators face when they're teaching about race, racism, and the civil rights movement in American history, and how that work could be limited by bills in the state legislature in Wisconsin and around the country.